Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Hi, it's Martha Stewart. You know, I spend a lot of time thinking about dirt. At 3 a.m., at all hours of the day, really. What people don't know is that not all dirt is the same. You need dirt with the right kind of nutrients. New Miracle-Gro organic raised bed and garden soil is so dense, so full of nutrient-rich, high-quality ingredients. Miracle-Gro is simply the best.
Oh, hello, and welcome to another episode of I Weigh with Jameela Jamil. How are you? I am great. It's been a terrible, terrible fucking week for fascism in America. Oh, well, but it's been a great week for the rest of us. Finally getting to see Biden and Harris up there and seeing so many people finally crying tears of joy and hope and seeing them on day one start to reverse the nonsense before them and start to make progress, make change that would help everyone. I believe in them. Listen, they might not have been everyone's first choice, and maybe that makes it harder for you to celebrate this moment. But try to, because it could have been so, so much worse. And now it's time to just make sure that we keep holding them accountable to deliver on all of the promises that they made. But it felt really special. It really feels like we have lived through something these past 4 years, not just with the presidency, not just with the violence against marginalized people, but also this bloody pandemic. Good for us for even being able to brush our bloody teeth. Well done, us. I'm proud of us because it's been a lot. And if you're still struggling, that's okay. We all are. We're all here together. Now, I told you last week that I want to keep bringing you inspiring and wonderful and joyous guests, and I've definitely delivered this week. She's one of my favorite people that I think I've ever met. Her name is Brittany Floyd Mayo. Some people will know her as Trap Yoga Bay on Instagram. She's a yoga instructor who does her yoga to trap music and is trying to make that form of therapy, meditation, and exercise more accessible to all people, women and people of all different genders, of all different sizes and shapes. And also mostly because she is herself a young, black, queer, single mother, she would like to make sure that the yoga space is not just inhabited by thin white women. She creates a yoga space for all. She's hilarious and so empowering. Her life story will blow you away. And she's just full of the most motivating and interesting and empowering and strengthening expressions and sayings. And getting to know her has been one of the great joys of my adult life. And I can't wait for you to find her now. She's had quite the upbringing, and I would like to offer a quick trigger warning that there are mentions of abuse and sexual abuse, and there has been some trauma that she has been through, but my goodness, has she come through it in a way that has not only healed herself, but is going on to heal thousands and thousands and thousands of people around the world. I honestly think one day everyone will know her name. And so I feel very lucky to have had her on my show at all. She's truly just the smartest and the realest and the most loving and lovable. And so please join me in hearing the story of the extraordinary Brittany Floyd Mayo. Floyd Bloody Mayo, how are you?
I am amazing, Jameela. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
I'm so happy to have you here. Okay, so anyone who has not yet heard of Brittany, she is an iconic yoga instructor and kind of a leader and kind of a healer, I would say, emotionally to all of the many people around the world that you have brought into the world of yoga. I was first put on to Brittany by a friend of ours, a mutual friend called Poppy Jamie, who will hopefully come on this podcast soon this year. And she just told me that there was no one more inspiring or uplifting or
amusing and joyous to take a yoga class from than Brittany.
I would see that.
Yeah. And so I heard so many great things about you. I started looking you up online and I'd never seen anything quite like what you do in yoga. I'd also just not seen a lot of black yoga instructors or black women in yoga classes, which I would say is fairly true in your experience, right?
Yeah, assumption. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And
I'm
so,
an anomaly.
No, well, for sure. I mean, you shouldn't be. And I don't think you will be like for very long because your movement is spreading so fast and so wide and your name has traveled all across the world. There are people from everywhere who know about you. And whenever I talk about you on my Instagram, everyone writes into me to tell me how much they love you or how much you've changed their lives.
Wow.
It's really special what you're doing. And one of the things that makes you stand out, aside from just being excellent yourself, is the fact that you have combined yoga with trap music and something that you call ratchet affirmations.
My favorite.
So
part.
I'm gonna get you to break down exactly what you do.
Yes. Is it time to break it down?
It's time to break it down.
Cool. Thank you for that lovely intro. And I'm happy that when you say my name, people say great things about me behind my back.
Yeah.
Not everyone is blessed in that way. So I receive that love. And thanks to all the people who love me and want Jamila to know how much you do. So yes, what I do is I host these Trap Yoga Bay experiences. And it's a true blue vinyasa style yoga class. But I do quite a few things differently. First, I include these things called ratchet affirmations. And a ratchet affirmation is my way of giving sage life advice, but kind of in the form of what you would expect from rap lyrics. So I would say something like, you know, you can accept someone for who they are, but not fuck with them for the very same reason.
Mm-hmm.
Or reminding people, you know, I'm a priority in my beautiful ass life. Or one of my favorite ones is, you are not that motherfucker's last resort, just the most convenient one. Things that help us, you know, help the stuff click so that we can begin to set boundaries and take better care of ourselves. Because the mind is the most important thing to me. The yoga is pretty secondary, but we do yoga. And each class is curated by a live DJ who spins trap music. But to be honest, it's a lot of times more hip hop top 40. Because when we start talking about real trap, people are not ready to do yoga to things like T-Grizzly. So it's more like T-Chainz.
And the lyrics aren't always entirely empowering to women.
No. So we have to be careful of the music that we choose and to navigate that, but it definitely is trap inspired. And then something else that I do in the class that I think is really exciting is we take twerk breaks. Twerk breaks. Yes.
Break down a twerk break.
Yes. So for those who do not know, twerking is like in its simplest form, a cathartic way to shake your ass. Keep it simple, like just shake your ass a little bit. And I like to do that because yoga is supposed to be this euphoric experience, right? We're going for nirvana or self-actualization. And more often than not, what we end up doing is closing down and feeling like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not doing a good job. Am I doing this right? I'm not breathing. And I like to throw in those twerk breaks because it reminds you to stop taking yourself so damn seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And I teach the flows and the music is bumping. And I say, you know, I've taught you all of these things that you can do, right? I'm not going to prescribe to you. Here are the things that I want to do. Here are the things that you can do. But if none of this resonates with you, fuck everything I said and just twerk. And people do it. They're like, yeah, okay, cool. This chaturanga thing, this push-up, I'm out. But what I can do is I can twerk. And so it keeps the thing going. It keeps people excited and it helps us to remember that self-care is what you say it is, not what someone on a stage with a mic is telling you it needs to be.
100%. I think that's really empowering. And also, I think the reason that I haven't participated in yoga for whatever in my life is partially because I'm just a terminal couch potato, but also because I find it's all a bit serious for me, if I'm honest. It feels a bit pretentious. It feels a bit like I'm a bit more like namaste away from me. Right, just fuck off. I don't like the breathy way
that
they try and talk to you. I don't like the pressure to feel peaceful. I don't feel like the pressure to feel enlightened. You know, sometimes I walk in and I'm just having a bad fucking day and I'm not in the mood to kumbaya my way through the next hour. You know, and I think what I like about the sound of your classes from what I've heard from all my friends who've now gone is that it doesn't feel that way. Like you don't have to turn up and feel zen.
No.
And you actually kind of stand against the fact that there should be any kind of pressure to feel zen in your life. You find it quite toxic, right?
I find it so toxic. And, you know, people and who are listening, you may be like, trap yoga in music, it does not make sense. But here's the thing, right? Yoga is all about finding a sense of empowerment. And as a woman, as a queer Black woman, so much of my life, that is exactly the opposite of how I felt. And so what I am focused on is empowering people. Because if I have no fucking peace, if I have no power, there is no peace. And so what I'm trying to teach people is to empower yourself. I just taught a corporate virtual yoga gig. And one of the moves that I tell them to do, I say, oh, you know, I want to count down, but here's why I do not do countdowns, right? Because they're like, hold it for 5, 4. And you're like, bitch, you know, I do not do countdowns because if I tell you to hold it for 5, some people may not realize how strong they are and that they can do it for 10. If I tell someone to hold this move for 5 seconds, they may not realize how empowered they are and that they can stop at 3. And so what I'm here to do is to just show up empowered and show up with my own strength and encourage people to step into their own shoes. Mm-hmm. Another thing that really pisses me off about my profession and my colleagues and what's expected in a yoga experience is that peacefulness, is that here, you know, lay on the mat and push yourself. And this is what healing is. And people don't tell you that healing looks nothing like, you know, beautiful smile, full makeup. It looks ugly. It looks dark. It looks lonely. It looks like crying. It looks like you need that trap music because you can't stand the silence and the sound of your voice and the negative thoughts drowning you out. I am against all of those things. And don't get me wrong, I want to get people to a place where they can meditate, where they can do yoga, where they can find their zen and their peace and their nirvana. But if we can be honest, 95%, and I made that number up, I'm just saying, but huge percentage of our population, at least the women that I encounter and that I'm called to serve, do not feel that way. And to tell them that this is how you're supposed to feel is a slap in their fucking face when they're just trying to survive.
Yeah.
When they're just trying to show up. And I say that showing up to a yoga class, just like showing up to life, is the absolute hardest thing to do. So as long as you decided to make the decision to be here, you've already done the work. Mm-hmm. And we have to stop prescribing, as yoga instructors, as mindfulness and meditation coaches, we have to stop telling people, if you can't clear your mind, you haven't done it right. I'm like, if you could just stop yourself from slapping one asshole, you've done it right. You've done it. You've arrived.
I love that. And I love the fact that you are just pushing so much for a release. You even have this move where you're kind of lifting your arm backwards and then bringing it over. And you're like, and now it's time to slap a bitch.
You saw
We're
that?
Going to slap a bitch. I've never heard of or seen anything
it's
like
a thing.
This at all. It's so funny. And I think that the fact that you bring humor into it, I think the fact that it's really dark in there, I think the fact that there's this kind of loud music that's really easy to just lose yourself in, there's something really transportational about mm-hmm. trap music, and the fact that you are the star of the show, like you are on stage, everyone is focusing on you, and that mm-hmm. means they're not focusing not only on themselves but more importantly on each other, because I feel like that's another thing with yoga, is that people can go there purely for vanity reasons mm-hmm. and I think that that's really toxic when it comes to any kind of exercise. I love any kind of exercise that is truly just about working on the inside out, but also you're not comparing yourself to what someone else is doing. You are sitting in your own individual experience, journey, and empowerment. And everyone is just kind of focusing on what to do next rather than how do I look? Like, yes. is there a mirror reflection of me right now? Am I getting this perfectly right? You are not interested in perfection. You are just interested in growth, even if it's just incremental growth. Do you feel mm-hmm. better now than you did at the beginning of this class?
Absolutely.
Then we've all won.
I mean, I cannot tell that you've not been to one of my classes. You have got it. There are two bits that we say in the class that really speak to that. And one, I tell them, you know, in the best way, today, this is about me. Mm-hmm. This is about you guys looking forward. Even if you want someone to pay attention to you, guess what? It's my ass shaking on this stage. You can be safe, you know? And as we go through the flows, I tell them the name of the game is stay in your lane. And to me, that means mind your business and keep your eyes on your own shit so that you will have no one else to compare yourself to. Mm-hmm. Because if I'm doing this move and I'm worried about where my leg is, the first thing that people want to do is look over to the right, look over to the left, and see what other people are doing. And the truth is, both of those motherfuckers could be doing it wrong. And so now you are going down this path, and sounds like yoga, but I'm really talking about life. Now you're going down this path because this is what people around you are doing, and you think it's right, only to get to the end and found out you came a long way, but went the wrong way. And so what I want people to focus on in my class and then in life is fuck what it looks like. Do what feels good for you and be benevolent. Meaning if it feels good to you and it causes no intentional harm to anyone else, then that's the right way. Mm-hmm. And that's what yoga in life is about for me.
Yeah. And keeping your eyes on your own lane, I think, is really important. Mm-hmm. Just outside of the yoga class. Truly, as you were saying, I've never been a competitive person at all in my life, unless I'm playing Scrabble, in which place I become a full on like psychotic murderer. But outside of that, I don't, like, in my whole career, I have always been bemused when other mm-hmm. women in particular try and compete with me, where I'm just like, there's no point. We are completely mm-mm. different individuals. We maybe look nothing alike. We are nothing alike. And there's enough abundance in this world for there to be space for all yeah. of us to have something. Mm-hmm. And I think women in particular are always taught that, you know, it's there's only space for one. There's only room for one. And I must destroy all other women in my lane because yeah. they are competing for that one space in the room, that one seat at the table. And it's really, really toxic. And I hope that people leave your classes thinking about the fact that I need to stop focusing on what other people are doing. And I think that mm-hmm. you and I in our careers have been a good example of people who are just like, you know what? I'm just not interested in what I'm supposed to do, what other people are doing. I'm going to go mm-hmm. and do something completely new.
Yeah.
And try my hand at like potential like embarrassment and failure.
Yeah, why not?
Just to make sure that I'm enjoying this existence in yeah. my own lane, and you can all go on and do what you're doing, but I'm just going to keep doing me. I think that has been a part of our success. And I hope that more people go into this year thinking about that. Stop worrying about what other people are doing. Don't worry about what you're seeing on Instagram. Just focus mm-hmm. and you will get there.
Absolutely.
It only distracts and destroys you, I think.
I think that that's exactly, what it is. And there are two things that really destroy our sense of self-worth and our sense of self-esteem. And I think you really hit one of them, which is looking at what someone else is doing. No one needs to be the next Trap Yoga. No one needs to be the next Jameela Jamil. You need to be the next iteration of yourself.
Mm-hmm. And if you are going to be the next Jameela Jamil, just don't tweet. That's the one bit of advice I'd give you. Stay the fuck off Twitter.
If you're going to jump in her lane,
it's not a diary. I agree.
But yes. And so the second thing is really not being cookie cutter, because we are communal creatures and we want to fit in. It's very easy for us to want to slide in and kind of fly under the radar so that we can be accepted. And I had read this thing the other day, and I don't know if anyone else is old enough to even remember the game of Tetris, but it said, do you remember what happens in Tetris when you fit in? You disappear. And so when we can think about not wanting to fit in and not wanting to be like someone else, all that's left is for us to be ourselves and be better than who we were at the moment before, always focusing on progress, not perfection.
Yeah.
And so when you're like, I'm not trying to be her, and I'm not trying to be whatever the status quo is, and I'm not trying to be perfect. And I know just saying those things out loud, I'm asking for a lot from people to want to do that. But on the other side of that is true joy, because I walk into this room with you and I don't worry about whether you're going to like me or not. Mm-hmm. All that I worry about is being authentic and being myself and
being accepted or rejected for at least who you truly are.
For at least who I am.
That's what it is. And just for the record, I fucking love you.
I love you too.
I know you don't care whether or not I do, but I fucking love you.
It feels good. It feels good to be loved. And that's a good thing. So I never ask anyone to accept me, and I never deny my acceptance of people. Again, the ratchet affirmation, I accept people for who they are, but I may not fuck with you for that very same reason.
And what's your affirmation about no?
No is a full ass motherfucking sentence.
Oh, I love that so much. It's one of my favorite things. I'm going to get it on every single
t-shirt.
You
want to do it. I go,
yeah, it's so good.
It feels good.
And another thing that, I think we've kind of touched on already, but like I said, you have people of skin colors that we don't traditionally see in a lot of yoga studios, but also different sizes.
Yes.
I feel as though, what do you think it is about your classes that are drawing in so many people who have, you know, until now been kind of shut out of yoga. Whenever I look at any fucking advert for yoga or any company that promotes yoga clothing, etc., it's always a very thin, very toned, very, very flexible white woman. And so what is it, do you think, that is drawing in all these crowds of people? Yeah. Really just like I've seen those kind of camera zooms you do of like the queue going down, the line, I think is what you call it in America, the line queuing up. Yeah. And she literally like at some times has seen something like 1,600 people in a weekend.
Yes.
This is the size of her classes. I mean, they're just like... Yeah.
The lines wrap around the block. It's insane.
Honestly.
It's insane.
If this was a cult, I would join happily. I'd endorse. It's not.
I'm not a cult leader.
It's completely pure and fun and kind of feels a bit like a party, which I've never heard anyone describe yoga as until now.
It is a day party. What I think pulls people in is the extraness. I think even if someone doesn't resonate with who I am exactly, they resonate with the authenticity. And it says that, hey, you may not have my body type, but it doesn't matter. You may not have my level of flexibility, but it doesn't matter. I think that level of inclusiveness invites everyone from all walks of life. And that kind of notion of it does not matter, right? I talk about twerking. It doesn't matter if you can't twerk. Still, come. I talk about yoga. It doesn't matter if you can't do yoga. You know, come and do it. And I think another thing, because my largest demographic is, you know, women between 25 and 44 who have children, and who live very busy lives, it's really hard to convince those women to take care of themselves. And so what I do is I mesh a party atmosphere with self-care. And I literally say, hey, does anybody want to come and throw that ass in a healing circle with me? And they feel that. They feel that extraness. They feel that authenticity. They feel that that beginner friendliness. And they come in droves. And it's been like that, Jamila, since the very first class.
Yeah.
My very first class I taught in San Francisco, I had about 92 people show up.
Shit.
And I was not expecting that. And for the record, 10 people in a yoga class is good. So from the very beginning, to have finally found my lane and have so many people show up for me while I show up for them. I love it. I do not always understand why, but I know that this is what I have to do. So I keep doing it.
And that's fucked a few people off, hasn't it? You've received some kind of pushback, not from the people who come to your classes. They love you. And then they spread the kind of your gospel far and wide. She also, by the way, has the most amazing meditations, which if you subscribe to her app, what is your app?
Yeah. So if you go into the Android or yoga store, Apple store, it's the Trap Yoga Bay app.
Exactly. And when you join up to it, which I have, it sends you emails and you get access to amazing classes or meditations or techniques and just constant affirmations and reminders to look after yourself. It's a really good app, by the way.
Thank you.
I really love it. It's been 2 weeks.
Yeah, it took me 2 years to develop it and raise the funds. We are not VC backed. We have no angel people. This is me in the traditional trap way. If people know anything about that culture, you take the money and you flip it and you bubble up. And I kept flipping it until I made enough money to make something that was going to change people's lives with or without me in the room with them.
Amazing.
So I'm very proud of it.
So you've actually fucked a few people off, right? Not everyone is thrilled from within the yoga world. The community themselves are loving this and just want more and more and more from you and of you. But you've had pushback, right?
Yeah, I don't get invited to a lot of the yogi retreats. I definitely have gotten my share of hate mail from other yogi purists asking questions about my yoga lineage or just outright saying like, you denigrate the message. I've been called primitive and all other kinds of
bloody
of
hell bullshit.
yeah like you think that yoga people are all zen. I'm telling you, that's the lie they tell you. Those fuckers are crazy.
I love this is amazing.
Yes,
this is a TV
come
show
me. They come for me.
Oh my god, it's like the mafia. Yeah,
it is. And you know, they're like, and where's your shakti and where's your bhakti and your rajas are all fucked up. And you're like, you know, and it's like, you know, I'm just gonna give you guys the shortest meditation that I've ever known. Everybody stop what you're doing, take a deep breath in, fuck you. And I move on. I just move on. I delete the messages. It's no big deal. I don't even respond anymore.
Wait, so okay. So to anyone who's listening to this right now, let's just all do that together.
Yes.
3, 2, 1.
Fuck you.
Oh, that does feel good. It feels lovely. Oh, I really needed that.
It is the shortest meditation and just so effective. So effective.
And you actually have, you know, you really went around the world and did the work to kind of to perfect this craft, but also to really learn and respect the lineage, right?
Yes. Yes. So this isn't no shade to the people who've studied here in the States. There are plenty of great programs. But when I wanted to study yoga and become a certified instructor, I went on an Eat, Pray, Love journey. I went to Rishikesh, India, and I studied at a vinyasa school, stayed in an ashram for months while I worked on gaining hundreds of hours. And, you know, I studied the Bhagavad Gita's, and I learned about, you know, Ayurvedic and all of these different branches and actually chose the one that works well for me. It's not something that I push hard because I it's important to me to not be pretentious. But if you come for me, I will promise you, bitch, I am certified. I am. And if the yoga isn't enough, I also went through great lengths to get the proper education to do the mindset things that I have. So I have a master's level degree in positive psychology and social behavioral studies. This is what I do. I'm not playing with it. And I'm not just being on a stage wildly throwing my ass and cursing. There is a science to the things that I say and the things that I do. And it's just important that I deliver my message in a culturally relevant way.
Also denigrating like the
fuck does that even mean?
It just doesn't make sense because so many things have come out like under the umbrella of yoga that have gone mainstream that weren't from the original premise of yoga, right? Like Bikram, for example.
Bikram just got here. And yoga is something that wasn't brought into the United States until to the early 1900s, right? And it increased in popularity in the 1960s. And that's when, all things considered, white women westernized it and took it over, and it became this non-brown thing, and it became about socioeconomic status, and it became about, going into a class and showing people what you can do with your body. And it really became more of a physical practice. Mm. And what people have to understand is, you know, and I'm not going to get too deep in it, but there are eight limbs to yoga. And before you can get to the physical practice, the asanas, there's the learning, and there's the breath technique, and there's the yoga of the mind. So the physical shit, that's actually down the line. Yoga in your mind is what's most important. And then the physical stuff, like, you'll get there, right? That's yoga in its essence is all about, if you were talking about a car, is about souping up your engine, souping up your mind. And what we do in the physical practice, that's just throwing candy paint on the whip. Because it's trap yoga, and I just got to keep making trap references.
No, I understand. I'll teach you all about it. I'm with you all the way.
Yeah, so, you know, you candy paint it.
Love talking about whips.
Yes. you candy paint it, and that's what the physical practice is. I don't give a damn if you can do the splits. Can you stop your mind from splitting you apart? Can you stop the negative thoughts? That is what I'm here for. And then yoga, the physical practice is the key stuff.
Maybe they're just threatened, you know, because you're doing so well and you're growing so fast. I feel very lucky to even have you here today because I think that in another year's time, you're going to be bloody open. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Now listen, we all carry around different stressors, big, small, medium size, and a lot of us keep them bottled up because sometimes we just have to. But doing that all of the time can really, really start to negatively impact your life. And I say that from experience. I'm British. We are told to never say how we're feeling about anything ever. And that's why so many of us are so sad. Now, a way that I was able to remedy that was by having therapy, which was super helpful for me, not only because it's amazing to get things off your chest, but also all week, you know, as you're bottling things up, because it's not always the time or place to say exactly how you feel, you know, you're going to get that hour where you're able to get everything off your chest and say it exactly as you want to. And this therapist isn't going to take it personally, and they're not going to hold it against you or throw it back in your face during an argument over dinner next week. You just have this complete freedom. Honestly, I think everyone should have therapy, regardless of whether they think they need it, because it's so amazing to have a confidant. It's a journal that talks back to you and helps you with all of your problems. I think therapy is just a safe space to get everything off your chest, to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, then maybe you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be super convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and then you can switch therapists if you don't like them anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/iway today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/iway.
With my busy life, I use Shipt same-day delivery to keep up. When I need a jar of extra creamy peanut butter delivered, I know my personal shopper Amber will come through. And if it's not on the shelf, she asks them to check the back. Shipt, delight in every delivery. Learn more at Shipt.com.
Capella University is rethinking higher education. With their game-changing FlexPath format, you can earn your degree on your schedule, so you can fit education seamlessly into your life. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Talk to me about why and how you got into yoga. Because again, it was not a space that was advertised for young black women to come when they needed to to release. And I cannot think of a group more, in particular in America, who more need to have some help in finding their peace and empowerment and zen and sense of self-preservation than black women here.
I agree. And thank you for seeing that and knowing that and not making me beat that dead horse. And when I do, you know, these interviews and conversations, something that comes up so much is, what's the key to success? Because very quickly, in less than 3 years, I recognize that I am one of the highest paid black female yogis in America. And it boils down to charging my worth. And it's because I know my worth. So how does that translate to success? I think it's being absolutely broken and hitting rock bottom. Mm-hmm. And that is where I found yoga, right? Make it make sense. Bring it full circle, bae. And so it wasn't until I went to college and I've long past tense, I had long dealt with anxiety, and I come from a very violent place, a very violent family. And that actually ended up in me being in foster care and fist fights and, you know, all sort of things. And I got to college, this new environment, and someone pissed me off and I did exactly what I thought I should do or what I was trained to do, which was fight. Mm. And I almost got kicked out of school. I lost my ability to run for freshman class president, and I was mandated to go to therapy. And the therapist recommended that I tried yoga. And it wasn't the first yoga class, right? Because I have to be honest with people. It wasn't the second, third. It took me about 6 yoga classes to really find a space where I was laying on the mat. And I realized just then in that moment how absolutely broken I was. Because when I was coming up, I was looking to the left and looking to the right and mirroring the things that I had seen around me, not realizing that that was the fastest way to not achieve joy, happiness, or success as I saw it in the world. And that began the journey that led me to here. And to be honest, it wasn't like, oh, and then I found it and everything was okay. No, it takes years to deprogram yourself. So I did exactly what most people do when they find something great. They leave it. I ditched that for what I thought to be love and ended up in a toxic and abusive marriage. And it wasn't until 9 years into that relationship, 6 years of it being married, having 2 children, starting off becoming a mother at 20, which means I was pregnant at 19, that I then realized, you know what? None of this is working. I am tired of living life based off of the scripts. I can see it that I am perpetuating the negative cycles of exactly the life that I did not want to have, that I saw in my mother and so many of other the people that I was raised around. And so I said, you know what? I'm going to break this life apart. And I literally threw my whole life on the ground, told that husband the last time he punched me in my face with a black eye and a bruised clavicle that I was going to Walmart. I put my kids in the car and I drove 32 hours to start a new life. Never, ever, ever looking back from Texas to Oakland.
Holy shit.
So that's how I found yoga.
Yeah.
It wasn't pretty. It wasn't cute.
And you just kind of remembered back to like, what was the thing that I did the last time I was at rock bottom at 15? It was yoga.
Exactly. Wow. And as I was laying homeless, jobless on the floor with 2 children, that is the exact question I said. I said, girl, you are lost. You have to find yourself. It's not about you anymore. You've brought life into this world. You need to have a better legacy for them. When was the last time you felt like yourself? And it was when I did yoga. And so I took odd jobs. I took my savings. I took a student loan out, went back to school, and asked for some support from my estranged husband's mother and said, I don't know when I'm coming back, but I can promise you I'm only physically here with these children. I am not mentally here. And all I'm asking is that you keep them while I go and I find myself. And that is how I found myself in India. And that is how I ended up in Shanghai. And that is how I ended up in Brazil. And I did not come back until I figured out who Brittany was.
That's amazing. And also, like, there's a lot of people out there who think that you'd be a bad mother for leaving your kids for someone else to go and pursue, like, your own happiness or sanity. Whereas I actually think that's fucking incredible mothering, to step back for a minute, because you've got nothing to give when you're empty.
Nothing.
When you're broken, you're going to end up just fucking them up. They're just sponges who are just absorbing all of your negativity. That it's only, you're only human. Like, you can't help. You've just come out of an insanely violent relationship. You have no idea what you're doing next. Like, there's no one to help you. I think that's incredible. It's very lucky that you had someone to be able to offload onto.
Yes, yeah, and a lot also, of people don't have that.
No, but also, I mean, yeah, let's not talk too much about your luck, because Jesus Christ, what a hard run you'd had. But like, but I think that that is phenomenal mothering, in my opinion. And I wish there were more mothers in this world who A, had that opportunity, of course, but B, took the opportunity when it was there. Because I bet it's there more often than we think, to just step back from them a little bit for a moment, just to regenerate, to refuel.
Yeah.
Everything else needs that. Why not mothers? Like, everything else needs maintenance.
We need that space.
Yeah, need to top up.
And, you know, a lot of times, and we talk about yogis judging. I also felt judgment from mothers when I would talk to people, you know, and I'd say about the journey, they're like, well, who kept your kids? Or, you know, didn't you feel bad? And it's like, hey, raising kids is a job, just like going to work, right? And what you get paid is in hugs and kisses and hope that these kids grow up to be, you know, upstanding citizens. But even with a job that you love, you still take that vacation time, don't you? You still need that space. And especially where I was at that time, being so, feeling so powerless, it's very easy. Can we talk about honesty? To take advantage of people who are powerless against you. And that looks like your kids making a simple mistake and you snapping on them because you've got all of this unresolved anger and unforgiveness and bottle, you know, and I found myself, you know, not abusing my children. I don't spank, and that's a whole nother conversation, but just not having the patience that they deserved. And I knew that if I kept going down this path, I was going to fuck them up. I had no patience. I was dutiful. I fed my kids. I bathed them. I read to them. I was literally a robot. Like, at that point, I was reading books on how to parent because I just did not have love in me to give them extra. So it was like they were on a schedule. They were taken care of.
You were just keeping them alive like Tamagotchis.
I was just keeping them alive. And that's not what I want. And that is still, it's one step above being in an abusive relationship and my children watching me be beat, but it's still not what I can be as a mom. So, you know, I optimized. I wasn't perfect. I made progress. I left that relationship. And then I had to optimize again, which is leave the negative relationship I had with myself. And I've been able to come back and be the mother of my dreams. And I've seen my children flourish because of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your children love you so much. I wish you were my mum and my dad.
just
whole family.
I'll be everything.
If you could adopt me, that'd be fucking brilliant.
Yes, at the end of the paper.
Great. So another thing, I guess, that's important to say is that, you know, I think when it comes to motherhood, and I imagine when it came to, you know, witnessing their childhood, you wanted it to be the exact opposite from yours, right? You wanted it to be as functional and as healthy and as loving and open as possible. And you had a wild childhood.
I will not say that I grew up with ideal role models. I call them reverse role models. You know, you see people and you're like, yeah, that's not what I want to do with my kids. That's not how I want to live. And, you know, shout out to my mother who we've worked on things, and she's going to hear this episode and she knows, you know, it is what it is. One of the things I do tell people who end up having these conversations, if you wanted me to tell kinder stories about you, you should have been fucking careful what you did, right? Like, I'm going to speak the truth. And if that bothers you, you should have thought about that shit when you were doing it. And that's for anyone.
Talk me through your childhood, because I think it's a really important part of your story.
Thank you.
And it's a part of, I think, what has bonded you and me so much, you know, finding a lot of kind of similarities and a lot of just shared grief and openness. And I think the more open people like us continue to be with people about our trauma, the more people will be open about theirs, because the saddest thing about yours and my childhood is that they aren't extraordinary.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually more normal than any of us care to believe. And,
yeah.
And I really appreciate you being willing to come on here and be so open. And so I would love it if you would take me through that.
Yeah, and I think it's consoling, but also unfortunate how common our childhood was, you know?
Yeah.
So for me, I'm from California, I'm from Oakland, and I literally was raised in a house that was constantly raided by the police and littered with violence. I have so many memories of being a young girl in the middle of the night and SWAT breaking down the doors. My mom sold drugs.
Fair.
She was a drug dealer.
Okay.
But at night, one of my brothers, not one of the ones that my mother birthed, but on my father's side, I would go spend time with them. I was raped and molested by my own brother for several years of my life. And I said nothing. And, you know, it cost me years of a healthy relationship with my sister. It cost me so
because
much.
She was there at the time.
Because my sister witnessed
Didn't intervene.
Right.
But also she was a
But she was young.
Kid.
Yeah. And it took me years to go back to therapy and to revisit that and realize when I was seven, my sister was 10, 11, maybe a little bit older. Not old enough to fully understand and not old enough to protect or to save me. And we can talk about revisiting trauma and in ways to turn your pain into power. And that's what we're talking about right now. The overall theme of my life is to turn pain into power. And so when I finally came to and I love you, I'm going to be super honest. And I told a family member, and that family member then took it upon himself to also rape and molest me.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I just had enough. I had enough. And I went to my mom and said, hey, I need you to know that this person has been raping me while you're at work. And her response was, you can't tell me who I can and cannot be friends with.
Oh my God.
And at that moment, I had enough of her shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I went and told an amazing teacher who and some other really great friends who were adults. And within 2 days, I was in foster care. I was 14. The system failed me completely. I went from group home to group home and had even worse experiences that I had even in my own mother's space. And eventually,
what was it like?
Yeah, in group homes,
because I don't know anything about.
Oh yes, so as a foster child in your late teens, it's not that it's not Annie, right? Well, Annie had a hard time too. She had a hard knock life, so it was like Annie.
Yeah.
There's just more violence. There are other children who've been in that, you know, been in that predicament, who have experienced even more trauma. And you get there and you show up, and you know,
they're acting out.
You're cute, and something that's always been said to me as a black girl from the inner city, like, oh, you talk white, you think you're better than us. Which is a whole nother situation. So now I'm in here and there's like six girls stumping me out inside of a bed. It's just, it's a lot. It's
Jesus.
A lot. And so I said, you know, well, this is horrible. So I went to some of the teachers at my school, because I've always been a good student. I've always been bright. And I said, I need help. I want to sue my mother, and I want to sue the state, and I want to be independent, and I want to live alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I was successful in that. So by the time I was 15, I was emancipated minor. I worked two jobs at Target and IKEA. I went to school in the day. I worked late nights. I paid my rent. I lived my life. And I was just waiting to get out the hood. And then finally graduated, went to college. And then that's kind of, I told the story out of order, but that's when got there first week, punched someone in the face. And that is yoga. So actually at this point, you guys know my entire life story from seven up until right now at this ripe, beautiful age of 32.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Christ. I mean, what a
right, and then I
journey.
And
what a journey. No, but
it has been grand.
But it is exceptional to see what you've come through and just like honestly be one of the most gracious, but also graceful. And you're so fucking strong. And you're so. And I also don't like using that trope about a black woman in particular, but you're like the ability that you have had to survive and then recycle that into such love, empathy, and empowerment of others when so many people tried to disempower you and kind of destroy you, whether it was intentional or not.
Yeah. They were destroyed. I don't.
Yeah.
I think they were just living their day to day. I don't think the thought process was like, I'm going to break this girl. It was like, hey, this is how I live, and you know, and that's that.
And right. But you and I don't choose to give into those fucking impulses. Like you were 15 the last time you gave into an impulse.
Right.
And I think I was probably around the same age. That was the last time I did something insane. Where after that I was like, okay, you know what? I took an overdose. I didn't hit anyone else because I was told by a doctor I'm clinically weak. So if I did, it wouldn't really do any harm. No one would complain. They'd just laugh. Not able to be violent doesn't mean I didn't want to. Just unable. Anyway, I remember you once telling me that you came from a family where if you would come home from school saying that like, oh, I got into a fight, the only question would be, did you win?
That's
amazing.
Yeah, and I got in my first fight in elementary school, and that was the question. Like, did you beat her up?
I was a weirdly violent 2-year-old.
Really?
I was a very violent 2-year-old because my brother used to show me The Terminator. That was my first film, and I used to watch it every single day.
Wow.
And I tried to kill my dad when I was 2 years old. He was like lying on the floor kissing my mum, and I got one of my sort of like toy hammers. Thank God it was a toy. And went up to him, smashed him on the head. Literally tried to kill him. 2-year-old. Uh-uh. Like a horror movie. The Omen.
You knew. You were like, this is a fucked up world. And I just, you know, you came with an anger pack. Right,
100%.
Like you were pre-programmed with like, this doesn't work. Men, you're the start of it. Boom, against the head. But you've since then refined your approach.
Little Terminator baby with a German accent, you know.
I love it. I love it.
But you. Like there have been plenty of opportunities in our lives where we could have used our intellect and our survival skills and our manipulation skills, which you have to have in order to survive as a woman going through this much kind of sexual assault or just the society of oppression. We could have used that against other people. And not to say that, oh, we're such saints, but I do have a very kind of, you know, a short string I have a very small amount of patience for other people when they are traumatized, for how much trauma they then go on to inflict upon other people.
Oh yes,
I can understand it, but I can never fucking excuse it.
Oh.
And I having been someone who was so traumatized myself by my childhood, and meeting you, who's also been so traumatized by your shocking childhood, you don't use that for evil. And so, you know, we all have to be accountable. And I found your accountability, as well as everything else that I love about you, to just be so inspiring. And I feel so jealous of your children for having someone
grateful.
Who's worked so hard on themselves to sort themselves out. And so it hasn't just been yoga that's brought you through. You have also had therapy. I think that's really important to tell
Extensive
people. You've had a
therapy.
Lot of therapy. How many years? Would you
seven,
say?
7 years was the start, but I've gone back. So I went 7 years consistently, but I've been in and out of therapy for about 12 years.
Yeah.
And even when I feel like I'm doing great, I take my ass to therapy, right? You always want to make sure that we're okay.
Who doesn't want a stranger to tell secrets to,
right?
And say things that can never be used against you?
And if you don't, you'll end up doing it like on an airplane, you know, just blabbing someone. Like, come on now.
Just a viral YouTube sensation.
Right? And now that there's Cash App, you know, just in case you turn the person sitting next to you on a flight as into your therapist, make sure that you tip them well. Like, hey, thanks for listening to my shit. Like,
yeah, exactly.
What's your Cash App?
No, exactly.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll want to invite everyone over. From book club to reality TV watch parties, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy, the way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Here you are, BPMs high, sweat dripping, body moving, tongue panting. You're working hard, real hard, and you're thirsty. You need vitamins, nutrients for peak performance and energy.
And your plants do too. Aw, I mean, just look at the little guy. Water-soluble plant food from Miracle-Gro is full of essential nutrients. Just a little scoop into your watering can and boom, instant feeding and bigger, more beautiful plants. It's kind of like a sports drink for your plants. You may have to suffer from heat, but your plants do not.
Thank you. I think this is an important time to talk about family because,
absolutely,
you know, I come from a very tricky family. There's a lot of abusive stuff that happened in my childhood. You come from the same. And as we've grown older, we have become very boundaried mm-hmm. when it comes to family. And I think, you know, a lot happened last year. It was a very, very tricky year for everyone. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of reflection. And I hope that everyone took a moment if they were able to have a beat and a pause in their life, if they weren't a frontline essential worker, just to reconcile with and to ask ourselves, like, when I go back to normal life, which we think is going to happen this year.
Yeah.
What is my new normal going to be? Who am I going to allow back in? Like, I feel as though last year put a magnifying glass mm-hmm. on my social circle and on the people that I choose to spend time with. I think it, you know, when you're in a case of, you know, a global pandemic and life or death, and you yeah. really just kind of life suddenly becomes incredibly simple when you're in an emergency. And it really made me think about who I want to be and who I want to be around in the following years of my life. And so recognizing that my boundaries are, you know, are so, so, so important to me is something that I think you really resonate with. And I think yeah. I would love to hear what you think about how people should approach the fact that they maybe come from problematic and damaging families. And also, by the way, your family don't even have to have done all the things that our families did to us.
Yeah. Just making you not feel great. I like to give people a marker, right? Because we have this idea and we say, like, know your worth and set boundaries. And people are like, I don't even know where to start with that. Mm-hmm. And so when I talk about relationship and community, one of the best ways to figure out who comes with us into this next phase and who doesn't, I say, if someone makes you feel like you cannot love them mm-hmm. and yourself at the same time, you got to let them go.
Yeah.
Right. If I can't feel like I love me while loving you, then I cannot love you. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is the best marker and the best way to start.
What does that look like? Loving yourself while you love someone?
Yeah. So to keep it light and put it in trap terms, anytime you're playing side bitch to yourself. Right. Right. Because I always got to bring it back up just a little bit. Playing side bitch to yourself. And what I say is to we have too much fun here. It's to nod your head yes. Like, do it with me. Come on, Jamila. Nod your head yes. And figure out what you want to say yes to. You want to say yes to joy and love and doing things that feel good.
I want to be the main bitch.
Yes, the main bitch. Saying yes to be the main bitch in your life. The number one. Now, nod your head side to side like you're saying no. And if you're listening, do it too. And whatever you need to say no to. No to fuck boys. No to fuck jobs.
No to anal.
No to anal if that's not your thing, right? It's okay. It's okay if you're vanilla. Vanilla is cool too. And now take a moment and nod your head yes and no at the same time.
Okay, yes.
Can you do yes and no?
No, I can't do this.
No.
Okay.
That is a revelation. You can never say yes and no at the same time. So realize that every time you say yes to one thing, you are inherently saying no to something else. And playing side bitch to yourself and loving someone without loving you means that you say yes to people who do not deserve your yes, and you're saying no to you. And
that you're not being integral.
You're not being integral to your true north. And that's, you know, I sometimes use the example of saying, you know, if you're hungry and someone else is like, hey, I need to eat, right? And you've prepared this meal for yourself. You've gone to the grocery store, like the little red hen. I don't know if you guys read that where you're from, but you've done all of this work to create enough for you to eat. And in Black culture, we always like, oh, you know, a seat at the table and everybody's got food on their plate and we're eating. And someone comes to you hungry without putting a dime up for those groceries. And if we're talking about emotions, not putting up any emotion, not putting up any love, but come with this expectation that you are going to stop anything and everything that you're doing to pour into their holy vessel. And holy, I mean, like literally holes, not Jesus holy. And when you walk away from them, you don't feel poured into. You don't mm-hmm. feel full.
Yeah.
You don't feel inspired. In fact, if you ever walked away from somebody and then you go back and you go to hang out with other people and they're like, yo, what's up with you? You seem agitated. You seem weird. You have effectively played side bitch to yourself. You've effectively fed someone while you were hungry. You've effectively now poured out from an empty cup. So if we're talking about what does that look like, it's check in with yourself about how you feel when you spend time with someone. And if I walk away from you, you, and I feel less than, and I feel frustrated, and I feel agitated, and I feel unhappy, and I didn't feel like that when I walked into the room with you, then I gave you something that you didn't give me in exchange.
So how does someone, how does someone then activate that? And how does someone then execute that?
Thank you. So some of the ways that I like to activate it is, one, through my affirmations. Mm-hmm. And people, you know, would be surprised about how often we don't look ourselves in the mirror and look ourselves in the eye and give ourselves all of that beautiful love that we keep giving to other people. And I'd imagine, you know, telling people, and I do, is say, hey, look in the mirror and say, I love you. And apologize for ourselves. I'm so sorry for the fuck shit that I let slide, but I promise it's not going to happen again. And if that becomes too complex, then just put a sticky note up on the wall and just read it until you have the courage to look yourself in the eye again. And that looks like setting boundaries with people. And one of my favorite boundaries, because no is quite hard for people to say. Like, mm-hmm. I come in here all healed, like, tell a motherfucking no, tell them no, tell them no. But it's not that simple. So I encourage people to do this thing called yes and. Have I ever taught you about yes and, Jamila?
No, you haven't.
Ooh, okay. So yes and is boundary setting. It's somewhere between, yeah, you can fuck over me, and no, I'm not dealing with it. And yes and says, hey, if this is what you want from me, I can do it, but this is what it's going to cost you.
Mm-hmm. How does one ensure that self-preservation? Because it's fucking hard.
Oh,
my
yeah.
God. When I stepped away from my, you know, my friends and family, I was subjected, specifically with family, subjected to so much shaming, not just from them, but from everyone.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, how could you? Mm-hmm. You know, but it's your family. But it's your family. As if like this great,
oh, I don't give a fuck,
sacred thing. It's just like, yeah, that's right. They were my family.
Exactly.
Well, they were
so
my
they
friends.
Should have known better.
And so I wasn't treated in a way that I found appropriate or helpful or conducive to my health or my mental stability.
Right.
So, you know, I still went and did it, but it was very, very difficult. And I think when I talk about doing it, I have thousands of messages a week from people, especially girls from ethnic minorities, where I feel as though, you know, for whatever cultural reasons, we are the most expected to respect our elders and
absolutely
endure whatever in the name of blood.
Sure.
So many of them being like, I don't know how to get away. I feel so guilty. I feel so guilted out of doing so. What do you say to those people?
So scrap the whole career thing. Mm-hmm. Let's stick to family. Let's stick to who comes with us in this new year. When I figured out who I was, and I still want it to be, you know, a part of my family's life, of part of my mother's life. I remember having conversations with her and having her tell me who I was. And because I used to really suffer from things like anxiety or and be frustrated and say, you know, there are certain people that you can't have around me. Or like I said, hey, you know, I'm not going to be around if you're going to continue that relationship. So two things that really helped me with boundary setting was, one, realize that I can't change them.
Mm-hmm.
And to not ask them to change, but to then...
No, I feel like we can invite
them to change.
To change.
We can't require them to, because
you can't force.
You can't expect. Yeah. Let's say I can't expect people to change. I can ask you to change. I can tell you what works for me. But when we start asking expectations, we're only adding insult to the injuries that they've already done to us. Because if they want it to change, you know, they will. Especially once you've put them on notice. So if we go back to the conversation I had with my mother about, hey, your friend, your guy friend, that when you leave him here with me, he sexually assaults me, and you've been put on notice. And to which her response was, you can't tell me who to be friends with. So for that, I said, well, you've dug your, you know, you've made your mark. You've said how you feel. And for that, the consequence is I remove myself.
Yeah.
And I won't be present. And I'm not. And again, that's what I mean when I say I'm not going to tell you you can't be with him, because now I've only added agitation. I've only upset myself. But what I can say is, hey, here's my yes and. Yes, I would love to heal with you. And you have to be ready.
100%.
And he can't be there.
And it's important to know that, again, like that is a very extreme example of like
very
reasons
extreme
to walk away from someone. But also,
but it can be,
if
you call
find
me
someone,
out my
be,
name.
Yeah, but it could be like, honestly, like if someone is manipulating you, if someone is coercively controlling you, if someone is putting you down about your body or your age or your life, about your parental skills, like there are so many toxic microaggressions aggressions and just blatant aggressions that happen, in particular in between family members. And what I have personally chosen to do is just say, these are the things that I need from you. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do them. But if you want me to stick around, then this you will have to meet me where I'm at. And so it's really your choice. Do you want me around? If so, this is what I need. Yeah. And if you're more dedicated to staying where you're at as a person, I understand that. But then for my own self sanity and preservation, I need to fuck off.
Yeah. And that's, you know, we can be honest, that's so much easier said than done. But I think that that's absolutely that. And it's really hard. But one thing I will say is start calling people out. And it doesn't have to be the theatrics. You don't have to, you know, make a big deal about it.
But do it in email. I love doing it in email.
Right? Like, hey, when you said that, this is how it made me feel. And I do have very specific step-by-step advice that I give people that I coach on how to stop that, which is like step one, when they say something like, you know, I'm on the thinner side and I have a lot of, you know, full body family members and they like to comment on my body. And say things like, oh, how are you eating? You look anorexic. And so you don't giggle. You don't let that go. I stop the room. So step one, you stop. You look them in the eyes and say, that doesn't make me feel good. Please don't say that again. If you're concerned about my health, I would prefer that you take me and we have a private conversation. But if you're saying this facetiously, that's dead. Don't do it again. Mm-hmm. And what happens is you take your power back, because when people do that and we get embarrassed and we giggle or, you know, or we blow up and
we enable it.
We enable it.
Yeah.
And what we've taught them is, hey, you can get a response from me. Because not everyone, you know, wants a good hugging, loving response. Some people just want to get off and say mean things and, you know, take power from other people. Because a lot of times when people are trying to take our power, they feel disempowered in some way.
Yeah.
And you can't have my power.
No.
You can't have my self-love.
And stopping the room takes practice.
I talk a lot
about the micro no and starting just with politely being like, oh, so sorry, but I actually asked for oat milk, not regular milk in this coffee. Would it be all right? And I know I sound like a fucking wanker. Don't worry, I understand.
I know.
Okay. I hear myself. But, you know, I was like, can I have the latte that I originally ordered, please? You know, or like, oh, this isn't actually what I ordered. I think is always just a really great way to start and then kind of working your way up. I personally, not everyone loves writing, but I love an email. I love an angry email for many reasons. First of all, it avoids the tension of confrontation for you. Mm-hmm. Second of all, it avoids the confrontation for other people. I know this isn't necessarily what you're endorsing,
but I'm just giving an extra tip
for people who aren't as bold and eloquent and well-versed in self-preservation as you are. So what it also does is it then gives the other person a pause, you know, of privacy. Because sometimes when we confront someone, we're going to trigger their defense mechanisms and we're going to trigger their ego. And it's actually asking a lot of someone to expect them to behave like a fucking adult in the moment, right? Because
it's
we're all just children.
How much we're asking.
But it is.
Absolutely.
Like, I know it sounds ridiculous, but you're expecting a lot of someone to expect them to hear something negative and critical about themselves and be able to respond to you with perfect empathy. Now, obviously, there are ways to communicate that are better to endorse that, like nonviolent communication. However, it's still just like, it can end up diverting the situation. It can end up like distracting from the cause. You can end up in a brand new argument because they're just like pissed now.
Yeah.
And so what I like about emails is the fact that you write it down. You are able to be more candid sometimes than you would face to face because it's, you know, you feel braver. But also that person has the opportunity to step away and go and take a breather and then come back and read it again. Or finish reading it at their own pace and then get back to you calmly. You also have an opportunity to write all of your feelings down and then go back and read that and be like, oh, fucking hell, I'm really glad I didn't actually say that.
Yet.
I'm going to just delete this, because when we say certain things, we can't take them back. They're out there forever. No matter how much you say sorry, there are certain things that have been said to me that I've just never been able to forget. I can never, ever, ever unsee that person saying those disgusting words to me. So email gives you a pause to stop yourself from being that irrevocable dick that you're about to be because you're in a moment of rage.
Yeah.
It's thoughtful, it's calm, and it creates time. This immediacy of our generation, I think, can be really toxic. I think it's really good to kind of give yourself that break and that pacing of what you're doing is hurting me for this reason, and this reason. This is what I need from you. And you're uninterrupted. No one screams at each other. And you get the full case sorted out there and then. And I live with my boyfriend and we email our arguments, even though we're in the same little house together and we're both like 6 foot and plus. We do that because then we know that we'll be able to get it all out and won't say something really fucking dumb that we can't take back. Unfortunately for me, he's a songwriter and he then takes my angriest words from my email, full sentences, and puts them in his fucking songs. And then I have to watch thousands of fucking people in a big festival sing back my angriest and most vulnerable moments to, like, to him on a stage. And that is very upsetting and surreal. So I think I might actually ask him for publishing rights.
Yes. Start sending him haikus. Yeah. Just keep it simple.
But if you're not dating James Blake, you should send options. Emails.
Yes. Do you know, Jamila, what I really love about this method that you've just unfolded right before my eyes? It plays the long game.
Love the long game.
It plays the long game. And a lot of times when we're upset and we want to, as I called it, stop the room, we're like, hey, my long game a lot of times is self-preservation and I have to, you know, I'm still growing and I'm still progressing. And this is why conversations like this are so important. But what you've just done or what you've explained, I imagine what it can do is give you an opportunity to say, hey, what do I want? Do I want to win an argument or do I want to really rebuild this relationship here? And so when you can take the time and not deal with it in the moment and add that extra breath, what we do is we actually show them not a white flag, not that we're weak. What we're saying is, hey, I value this enough and it's affected me enough that I'm still thinking about it. And I value enough that I'm thinking about the words that I'm saying, or at least I'm trying to think about the words.
And I'm trying to make our relationship the best it can be. I think it's really flattering when someone offers you an edit. It means that they're hoping to continue a relationship with you. Because rather than ghosting you or just cutting you out of their life, they're inviting you to see their perspective. I think it's hugely flattering.
Beautiful. And it's great advice to give people, because otherwise, if they take, you know, our words without the grain of salt that people should, if it doesn't apply, let it fly. Then we talk about loneliness. Folks are going to get real lonely if we're like, if they hurt your feelings, cut them off. And we live in a cancel culture. And I do not want to heavily promote that, right? Like all of the things that I've said to you guys about my mother, I also said she's still probably going to listen to this episode because we are finding our sweet spot. We are humans. And I'd be a fucking liar if I didn't say there are people in the world who, there's no one in the world who says I did not hurt their feelings. And so I want that opportunity. If I've ever been offensive or said something stupid or rude or to be a total asshole at redemption and to be called out. So yes, now that doesn't mean if we're listening, I never met you, you can send me some email about how I offended you. Like that does not necessarily work for me, but for the people who you love and who you know personally and who love you back, I can see the huge benefit to that. So this is me being humble and being adaptable and saying thank you for that.
Yeah, I think it's a warning shot. Like, always fire a warning shot. And I think last year we saw a kind of, you know, probably because everyone was at home, you know, and frustrated and scared and bored. Like there was more visceral hatred and lack of patience for redemption. And in some situations we completely understood, you know, for example, with the Black Lives Matter or the Trans Lives Matter situations, like people are just over it, way, way beyond the point of patience now.
Yeah.
But in general, there is such a lack of faith in progress.
There's no space for missteps.
And that's where all the growth and the beauty and the magic comes in. You know, we've had scientists on this show who tell us that literally the greatest and most effective way for your brain to learn is via mistakes. That's when your brain obtains the most information as to like how to reprogram itself. It's when you have the jarring, memorable moment of I fucked that up and now I need to shift gears, reverse. Yeah. And like figure out how to do this again. That's when you are going to learn your most. It's when your brain is going to be its most open to proper, fertile change. So if we don't allow people to make mistakes, how are they ever going to fucking learn? And obviously, I'm always just being clear. I mean, irrevocable harm. The people who harmed you and me as a child, they can die in a bin.
And I'll be okay with
that. Maybe that bin's on fire. Who knows? Redemption isn't for everyone. But I think for those who we believe have the capacity to redeem themselves.
Capacity,
Let's let's give it a shot this year. Let's give it a beat. Let's remember that if you show that you do not believe in the capacity for someone else to progress or to improve or to change or learn or evolve, inherently that means you're saying that you don't think you do.
Yeah, we are full of these two thought processes that comprise in our minds. And one is our self-love. We want to be kind and we want to love ourselves. But the louder voice in our head is that of condemnation. We condemn ourselves. And that is where we end up in these negative situations. And that is where anxiety and depression and dysmorphic thoughts come from, because we have this unresolved anger with ourselves. So it's not about, I need to forgive him for that scenario. It's, I need to forgive myself for allowing myself to be in that so that I can move forward, realizing that there's no such thing as a mistake. My steps are ordered, and everything that I've experienced is to teach me a lesson. All of the trauma that I went through, mm-hmm. I make it make sense, because right now there is hardly a woman that I've met who can tell me about her trauma, and I have not personally experienced that. So I wake up knowing that all of the shit that I went through was so that I could go through. I went through a tour de hell so that when I meet women, I know exactly where they are and I know exactly how to get the fuck up out of there. And that is how I make all of the trauma that I went through makes sense, so that it doesn't feel like mistakes or bad luck.
Lessons.
It's just school of hard knocks, baby. I graduated top of my class.
That's fucking great. Oh my goodness. What a burst of inspiration and self-preservation. We're in a new year. Any advice?
Do you.
Just do you.
Yeah, not new year, new you. I like that, not that shit. But yeah. I really say this year, do what feels authentic.
Yeah, prioritize yourself.
Prioritize
what
yourself.
What do you need? Who do you want to be? What kind of life are you living? We only get one shot of this shit.
Right?
And God, so, I always quote Eminem, for fuck's sake.
Give it
but,
to
no, what I mean is, you know, you know, this life and this time that we have is sacred, it's precious. Yeah. How do we make the most of it? Because I think if ever we learned, it was last year, that there's no point really making big plans or thinking that you can predict anything.
Right?
Like everything can be taken away from us in a moment's notice, just like that. The whole world stopped turning. And so if we know that that could potentially ever happen again, what are we going to do before then to make sure that we did our very best to have a great fucking time and a great fucking life?
No matter what, all you have is yourself. And there's this saying that says, everywhere you go, there you are. And I think last year when there was nowhere to go and there people were, that a lot of folks realized that they did not love the life that they were living. They did not love the body that they lived in, and not the physical body, but just like their existence.
Yeah.
And so, what do you do when you wake up and you realize that you are only tolerating yourself, and that you bring these people around you, and you've busied yourself with accolades and jobs and children and relationships, mm-hmm. and all of those things got stripped away, and people realized they didn't know who they were.
Yeah.
They didn't know what they wanted. And so this year, you know, I just say, here's my top two priorities that I'm living by, and I hope other people do. Priority number one, my motherfucking self. Priority number two, that's it. My motherfucking self. Refer to priority one. And it sounds selfish, but you know.
Look, if we maintain ourselves, we'll have more to give other people.
Absolutely. And you think of self-love is in the same way you think of, you know, the heart in our body. And our heart is where our love comes from. And it's also what provides that blood, that oxygen to everywhere. And if you want to live, you've got to think of your life like the heart. I am going to give love and everything and warmth and keep this whole party going, right? To my limbs, to my friends, to my loved ones, but only after I first given it to myself and digest that. So
it's
that's
the year of me.
It's the year of me.
I want everyone out there to just think about me, Jameela Jamil, and how we can all make my life better.
Just do it. Just... Only if your name so happens to also be Jameela Jamil.
Yeah, exactly, right? Exactly. This is your year. This is a year just for you. And I think that that's a wonderful message.
Yeah.
So just not a new year, new you. New year, happier you.
Happier you.
Yeah.
New year, real you.
Yeah.
New year, real you.
There you go. Got a slogan for your class. All right.
T-shirt.
Where can we find you, Brittany?
Yes. So you can find me on Instagram as Trap Yoga Bay. I am that same way on YouTube and just everywhere. Like I like to just say it like, you know, Google me. Just Google Trap Yoga Bay. Yeah,
maybe we're allowed out for classes.
Yes,
this
maybe.
Year. Who
maybe.
Knows?
You know, I've got good SEO. And if I have a class, if you look at it, I will remarket and target you. You'll find me and I'll find you.
Well, bloody hell. This has been great. I feel nourished, truly, as I always do whenever I see you or hear you talk. And I will come to one of your actual yoga classes. I've been avoiding it because I don't have a bum. So pray for the buttless. And therefore, I was worried that I'd let you down with twerking. But I'm gonna make that effort to get out and get to one of your classes. I cannot wait. I think it's something that I probably really, really need. I think it's something we all need. We all need a Brittany Floyd Mayo in our lives. Yeah. So before you go back to your life of helping, empowering other people, will you tell me, Brittany, what do you weigh?
I weigh authenticity. Mm-hmm. I weigh my joy. I weigh my children and my ancestors. I weigh the burden of being their wildest dreams and pressing forward a movement. I weigh the table and all of the seats that I'm creating for it. I weigh joy.
Love that. Love you. Thanks for coming on.
I love you too. Thank you. This was amazing.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. I Weigh with Jameela Jamil is produced and researched by myself, Jameela Jamil, Erin Finnegan, and Kimmy Gregory. It is edited by Andrew Carson, and the beautiful music that you're hearing now is made by my boyfriend, James Blake. If you haven't already, please rate, review, and subscribe to the show. It's a great way to show your support. I really appreciate it, and it amps me up to bring on better and better guests. Lastly, at I Weigh, we would love to hear from you and share what you weigh at the end of this podcast. You can leave us a voicemail at 1-818-660-5543 or email us what you weigh at iweighpodcast@gmail.com. It's not in pounds and kilos, so please don't send that. It's all about your you know, you've been on the Instagram. Anyway, and now we would love to pass the mic to one of our listeners. I weigh the grit that I had in times where nobody stood beside me. I weigh voicing my honest opinions, but also being open to other perspectives. I weigh admitting my mistakes and working on them so that I slowly but steadily become a better version of myself.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.